Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, listeners, it's Jenners from the Mixtape Memories podcast here to tell you about something positive. Sex positive, in fact. If you're like me, by now you've probably got a lot of time on your hands and are desperately seeking some form of pleasure or a stimulus. Well, I've got this awesome offer for you from our lovely sponsor, AdamandEve.com. Right now, you can select almost any one item for 50% off at AdamandEve.com. But wait, on top of all that, you will also get some awesome free stuff to spice up your bedroom. Enter the code MIXTAPE, that's M-I-X-T-A-P-E, MIXTAPE at checkout and get 10 free gifts. Few special sexy items, plus 6 spicy movies, and you got a whole evening ahead of you. And also, free shipping, can't forget that. Get yourself a gift, or surprise your partner or partners, as it may be, with a gift. And don't forget to put together a special mixtape playlist to set the right mood. Shoegaze, perhaps? The offer code again is mixtape, M-I-X. T-A-P-E, mixtape, at AdamandEve.com. Hello, and welcome to Mixtape Memories.
Woo, this Yay. Is episode 6 of season 2.
Yeah, and this is Jenners.
I'm Matt Hart Spade.
And today we have Micah Weisberg.
Hi, guys. Woo, thanks for having me.
Yeah.
I'm excited to be here.
I know, I'm excited to get to know you, because you and Matt have known each other for a while.
Yeah, I was trying to think what year it was that we met. I didn't do all the homework, but I want to say it was like around 08, 09.
Yes, somewhere around there, because our old friend Facebook told me literally this week that it was 10 years since we friended each other.
Oh.
So that doesn't necessarily mean that was the first meeting, but...
So 10 plus years.
When we made it official.
Yes, exactly. And the first time we met, you recall better than I do, but it was at one of these like...
So this
bars that no longer exists, right?
Go back through the memories here. So you remember this bar, Angels and Kings, which at the time...
It was a Pete Wentz affiliate.
It was Pete Wentz from Fall Out Boy. and it was like the hot new club. I feel like what's his face on SNL would do a segment on it. Stefan. Remember, and it was like him and all the cool emo band singers at the time. They like all went in on it, the venture together. But more so, I was following the Music Slut, which was your blog at the time. I got all my local news. I don't know how I discovered it. Probably through another aggregator, but
I feel like Hype Machine was. We were always very high up on Hype Machine.
Yeah, Hype Machine definitely.
Everyone read Music Slut. I feel like
so it had, we had. I had a moment.
Yeah.
No, you guys were like. You were one
Very
of the top local blogs for a long time.
Yeah.
And I think we were hosting some sort of like meet fellow blogger type event.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe it was like an anniversary or something of your site or something.
Yeah.
But I was like, oh, this would be great. I'll go check out this club, but I'll also try and meet these bloggers that I love their site. And maybe since I was in video production, I was like, oh, maybe I can pitch him some ideas, some features or something. And then I got there and it was packed and I was trying to squeeze through the bar.
They weren't all Music Slut people. I think there were some people that just wanted to seek out Pete Wentz.
If they were all there for you.
I don't know about that.
They were all there for you. Anyway, so then I forget who I talked to first, probably your partner on the site at the time. And then she was like, oh, you have to meet my partner, Matt. And then I was like, this is great. Mm-hmm. He's so nice. And then the rest was history. We started doing video.
Yeah, pretty shortly after that, we started doing video features for the site.
Cool. So you guys worked together on that.
Yeah, like these little short vignette type things.
We did some good ones.
Yeah, we were on YouTube before YouTube was like the go-to for everything.
Was that the Adam Green like?
Yep.
Yes. That one was awesome. We did it in, so we tried to do these interviews in like unusual settings. Mm-hmm. To try and just put a little twist on it. So Adams was at Webster Hall, but we were like, you pitched him, like, do you want to just, like, go in the bathroom stall or something?
I definitely didn't suggest it. I think he suggested it.
Or he did.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Regardless, yeah,
we wound up there in the handicap stall.
That's right. And which was large enough for three people and a camera. And it was a great interview. I think he was, like, posing on top of the toilet something.
Yeah.
Being all cheesy.
We had a whole Moldy Peaches, multiple Moldy Peaches moments in the first season.
Yeah.
Love
that. And man, we had a lot of good ones. Remember We Are Scientists at
their apartment Williamsburg,
which was across from Main Drag.
Did they all live together?
I think it was maybe Keith.
It was just Keith. Yeah, but it was just at that point, it was only two of them left, I think.
Well, it's always kind of been just the two of them.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, right. They had the drummer on the first record. Yeah, that's right. Regardless,
they did an acoustic set for us on their couch.
I was like, this is so cool. They're playing for us in the living room.
Yeah.
Like,
that's
exclusive.
Pretty advanced for blog back then, mm-hmm. I feel like. Uh-huh. You know? Like, that's pretty impressive. I'm impressed.
It was really fun.
Like, film it on your phone and like.
No, it was the real deal, which was really exciting for me because I didn't have video content before that. Now I had original video content that was like well edited, and I was like, this is cool, you know?
Right. And Matt gave me access to like this whole other corner of the indie music scene that I had just been discovering only on the blog up until that point. So
we also interviewed Kate Nash when she was the shit back
That's
in
right.
like
I forgot about that
she
one.
She was cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I think for me, one of the favorite ones that we did together was when we worked with Sandra Lerke.
Totally.
It was like the middle of winter and we recorded an acoustic session in McCarran Park.
In front of a giant tree.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
And he was so nice.
He's so nice.
I bet that was so charming.
I still keep in touch with him because when I was interning at a record label back in the day, I was like on the intern marketing team for his debut here. Called Faces Down. So I've known him through the years and it's kind of nice. He's also like the exact same age as me, so I feel like I've kind of grown with him. He's in LA now, but yeah.
He's
a good guy.
Putting out records still?
You know, it's funny to say that because he just tweeted something as of the day we're recording this, and I think he's announcing a new album tomorrow.
Oh,
kind of
cool.
Teased
Ooh.
It. Yeah.
That's good to know he's still doing it.
Still doing
That's
it.
That's great.
I mean,
he's huge.
Unique.
Yeah, he is.
Know?
Mm-hmm. He also has a gigantic following in those Scandinavian countries.
Yeah.
You know?
I like first saw him when he opened up for like Regina Spektor, and it was like, I was like, who is this guy? He's really, I don't know. I just found him really charming, mm-hmm. I guess, and I think that's why I like the music.
Yeah,
I mean, he's a good-looking guy too. I remember the early shows; it would like the first three rows would always be girls like
but
fawning over
in
him
in a boyish way,
in a boyish
not
way,
not like a man way.
Oh no, in a boyish way. Yeah.
It wasn't really my type, but like,
yeah,
he's super cute.
Yeah. So that was when we first started getting to know each other, hanging out, and then, do you want to talk about all the bands you've been in through the years?
Well, I mean,
there are a few.
There's a few. I mean, don't have to name them by name per se, but you know, I was in four bands over the past 14 years, mm-hmm. everything from pop rock to indie garage to punk. So got to sample it all, played at different kinds of venues.
You've played at pretty almost every venue locally that's, you know, 500 and
pretty
under cap, right?
Pretty much. Yeah. I mean, and some that exist still and some that I've long gone. So, I'll always remember playing at Glasslands, though. Mm-hmm. In Williamsburg, because I thought that was like mini making it at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Such a tastemaker spot.
Mm-hmm. Was that when Pop Gun was booking it?
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. Also, I just remembered, what was the one around the back on North 6th? No, Cameo Gallery.
Cameo.
Oh, Cameo.
I just remembered that one too.
Yeah.
I liked so Cameo.
Like, all these great venues were like right in that sort of like off of Bedford, but it was still a little sketchy around there. Not as many, you know, housing condo developments and stuff. Yet Studio B.
Of course, yeah.
One of our favorites.
Yeah. One day we'll do a whole episode on Studio B, I feel. I had a lot of messy nights there.
Lots of fun memories there. Waiting in the rain for like CSS or something. Yep.
Oh, right. They played there too. Yeah.
I saw Crystal Castles there, Patrick Wolf.
Yeah. Yeah, but Glassplans, that was a near perfect DIY venue, I would say, because it catered to major touring acts, but also really supported the local scene.
Yep.
You could see your friends play there. You could see giant bands play their after parties there.
Mm-hmm.
It was like super makeshift stage that you felt like it was going to collapse at any point.
Yes, for sure.
And then they had that weird upstairs, like...
That never felt safe.
Right? Yeah. Like, it all felt like it was about to collapse at any point, but...
But that was the joy of it.
Yeah. it was like they put it together with, like, spit and, like, twigs and...
It literally felt like that.
Yeah, but it just... So many great memories there, and...
I love the clouds, too, of course.
And,
iconic.
And the backdrop, exactly. Yeah. That was so iconic. Like, you'd see these photos, these live photos, and you're like, where is that? And then it just became its own thing.
Pre-Instagram.
Oh, yeah, pre-Instagram for sure. Like, I probably had, like, a disposable camera there taking photo prints.
And it was so many Instagram moments or just photo-friendly moments
that I
didn't really capture.
Could you imagine if Instagram existed when, like, these crazy spaces and, like, I don't know, all these, like, underground kind of venues and parties, like, the shit people would be like...
And I wonder if some of them would have existed the way they did if people were able to document them as overly document them as people do these days. Like, I wonder if some of these parties became exclusive and had that reputation because it did. People didn't know what they looked like.
Mm-hmm.
So there was that mystique.
And you really can't have that these days.
I mean, exactly.
You hear of these artists that try and shut down the whole camera thing at shows and whatnot, or like... People trying to take photos at a Broadway show. People have no respect anymore, I feel. Not to like, but people just don't get it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I was at, I very, very rarely go here, but I was at the Met about a year ago, and people were trying to take photos during the opera. And I'm like, really? Like, chill, you know?
Yeah, I think there's...
Granted, I was in the cheap seats. I'm sure the people in the expensive seats weren't doing that.
Just Google a photo and post it. Really. Like, no one's going to know you didn't take it.
Yeah,
exactly.
Well, so then that probably explains the rise of, like, the party photographer back in the day, right?
Because
you had Cobra Snake and you had all these, like, mini pseudo-celebrities because they were the ones taking the photos that you'd see on the blogs on Monday at work. Because we weren't.
That's true. They were like behind the scenes or like capturing all the drunk moments.
It's true. I remember actually when I would go to Misshapes, I would wait because it was on Saturday night, I believe.
Oh,
I would
Misshapes,
wait till Monday to see like if the photographer included me in the edited gallery.
For sure.
In my whatever ridiculous shirt I was
it's
wearing
like
or blazer.
Paparazzi.
Yeah.
To look, like you were in NME magazine.
Exactly.
That was the key to getting photographed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. Yeah, so Glasslands was fantastic.
Yeah.
What was it? 285 Kent was around down the block.
Mm-hmm.
Man, even Trash Bar, I'll say, had some fun shows.
But then it went to trash.
And then it was always trash.
Yeah.
cool trash.
Yeah, I don't know. I never liked it as Trash Bar, but I think it was just, I don't know, the programming or something. I don't know, something about it. But, you know, but I'm... partial because I was, you know, really into it as Lux. So it was
right.
Everything after Lux, it was just terrible there. I don't understand it. I don't know. But I can't believe that's gone now. And now it's a
no
barbershop?
Oh, is it?
Either that or is it a boxing gym.
That's what it is. I knew it was like a like, B.
Well, that makes sense.
Wow. Wow.
Can you believe that?
So it's random.
So random.
Yeah, so and the old Glassland space is now Vice is for Vice. The last few years. Yeah, yeah.
Ironically, which I've worked at.
Yeah, yeah.
Which had some good times there, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, full circle.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, I mean, Vice parties, they were like a thing. Are they still a thing? Do they still have parties?
I don't get invites to them anymore.
I'm sure they
know.
Still do, but not sure. But yeah, and even like, well, that was all in Brooklyn, but like in the Lower East Side. So I was walking there a few weeks ago, and it's just, I know this is obvious, but it's unrecognizable.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, the days of like walking down Ludlow, and you'd do all your stops. You'd
yeah,
hit
yeah.
pianos, you'd hit cake shop, you'd keep going, you'd go to dark room,
mm-hmm.
you'd do all the stops along the way.
Oh my God, dark room.
Dark room. That was one of our.
Oh yeah, I like
favorites.
Going to dark room.
I mean,
for some reason, I don't know
it's
why.
It's like Coke room.
Yeah.
I just remember it always had a really sought after DJ
yeah.
spot, and they'd have like, you know, singers from known bands do.
Mm-hmm. That's true. It was very hip.
Yeah.
Spots
yeah.
there, and then what was the other bar on that street?
Pianos.
No, it was just a bar. It wasn't a venue. It was.
Oh, I can't remember.
It was near Katz's. It was like
near
almost
Katz.
Across from Katz's.
The Pink something rather?
No.
No.
It was like a name, like a person's name. I don't remember.
Only thing I can think of with the person's name over there is Arlene's Grocery, which is definitely not what you're talking about.
No. Man, I played Arlene's Grocery before it was total not cool. But I loved that space, though.
Mm-hmm,
the
mm-hmm.
idea of Arlene's Grocery. I mean, mm-hmm. the Strokes played some of their first shows at Arlene's Grocery,
mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
it definitely had its moment.
I don't think it has much cred these days.
Not
yeah.
Not these days, unfortunately. Yeah.
Sometimes I see like comedy shows there, and I'm like, is there some sort of like Arlene's Grocery revival? Or like, there'll be like the random shows there that, you know?
Yeah.
You're like, oh, okay.
I mean,
know?
It's still.
It's now part of New Colossus Festival.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. Which, I mean, you guys tell me we're kind of skipping ahead here, but that reminds me of like. Playing CMJ Festival.
Of course, yeah, yeah. We had Leo in here a couple episodes ago, and
yeah.
we were talking about New Colossus and how it compares to CMJ and how it compares to South By and how it compares to Northside.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but I got to say, it's for me, it's exciting that there's something brewing, you know, because
yeah.
I think for a few years there was really nothing going
mm-hmm,
on here.
Mm-hmm. And especially after Northside kind of folded,
yeah.
Northside Festival. I love that Leo and Steven Matrick and
mm-hmm.
those guys like are trying to revive that
mm-hmm.
sort of CMJ spirit because
mm-hmm.
that was so fun. That was, I remember like doing features for your blog
mm-hmm.
and like catching all these British bands that we were dying to see, and you see them in these tiny rooms that were still like cutting edge, like pianos was packed every.
Yeah, and you see like Friendly Fires before they went on to play rooms that were 10 times
exactly.
the size, you know?
Yeah.
yeah.
You'd see like Twin Peaks play to like 50 people
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and they crowd surf to the bar.
Right, like, right,
it was
right.
Wild.
No, I miss that in some sense, even though I don't go out as much as I used to, as we've all, you know, been thinking about recently, last few years, but I do miss the element of just kind of walking in and stumbling upon something and then kind of, you know, back in the day, getting the CDR
yes.
or like actually talking to the artist and then kind of developing a friendship and then organically writing about what you enjoyed and, that's gone, I feel, you know?
Yeah. And I don't know, like, it's like a different, I like that they're trying to, like, feature bands that are, like, emerging or up and coming, whatever the term is these days.
Yeah.
You know? Like, I think that I hate, like, the festivals that have become so commercial that it's just like, it's like Kanye is going to be playing at this festival or it's Beyonce or
yeah.
something. And you're just like,
or like the VIP
what?
Packages.
Oh
it's
yeah.
All
yeah.
VIP
yeah.
packages. Right.
Well,
yeah.
a lot of times I don't feel like they're catering to fans of music. They're catering to people that want to get photos at the show or just, yeah, yeah. That term is, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's about money.
Yeah, it's about
know?
Money.
And
yeah.
so, like, if you're trying to get sponsored or something, like, and you are, like, big money, then you have to have a big name. So then, Yeah, they're just going to get all these, like, freaking mainstream artists that don't need to be playing, like, South by Southwest or, like,
right.
You know. But I get it, you know. It's like a business. So it's like I respect it for that. But I'm always, like, seeking something with a little bit more curation and, like, discovery. Because that's what I, like, liked about going to, like, festivals and seeing the random man. I love... like falling in love with like a new band.
Yeah.
Agreed. I mean,
I think also the element of when you're seeing an act and there are, you know, X amount of people in the room and it's not a large number and you kind of take ownership over the band. Like, remember back in the day, I haven't listened to this band in a long time, but like Bird Monster, they were one of the buzzy block bands ages ago.
Yeah.
But I remember seeing them at maybe opening for someone at Mercury Lounge. And I was like, oh, I love them. And then I like devoured it all. And then, you know,
like the bands you go to the front.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You know definitely. I mean? Like... So I know that like one of the many things we bonded over back then was like seeing the British buzz bands before they were big in the US.
Exactly.
And there
you've always been a follower of like NME and all the buzzy UK stuff.
Love.
And I mean, I was very into it at one point and then not as much these days, but I would always love when there would be like a band that is getting wild attention overseas and then they come here and it's you know,
and you'd be able to get the tickets because you were reading about them in NME. Like always remember seeing Arctic Monkeys, not to age myself, but on their first US visit, and they played Mercury Lounge and I was like front row with the disposable camera or the digital camera, whatever was. And, you know, they're just covered in acne and they're playing these punk songs.
Yeah.
And I'll always remember that. It was like the way I always want to remember them.
I remember I must have saw them on the next, when they came back a couple months later and they played Webster Hall and everyone was jumping up and down. It felt like,
I think I was really at that one too.
It felt like a trampoline. It was scary actually. Yeah. The old Webster before it was all remodeled and whatnot.
Yeah.
Yeah. You still read all those UK publications?
Well, it's funny. I mean, I miss the days when you would go to Barnes & Noble or wherever and you'd get the physical copy of NME or Q magazine or whatever. And that's, I would read, those were like my Bibles. I would find out about all these new guitar bands and I would just follow them, you know, religiously and watch their trajectory. You know, I'll occasionally still check like NME.com. They'll have some.
Well, it's digital only now, right?
It's digital only now. And they also feature a lot more on like film and, you know, branded stories, obviously, to drive traffic. But, you know, still read the Radar column, the new music, follow that. Spotify, obviously, is now, I guess you'd say that's the new way to, is it? I guess so, to discover, like...
I mean, for lots of people,
new bands and stuff, I mean, we could get into the whole CD discussion, too, because I'm super old school in the sense that I wish there were still... a need for CDs. I loved the CD format. It was just so fun. I mean, vinyl's great. CDs were hilarious because they would charge, the stores would charge an arm and a leg for this piece.
Oh, yeah. Especially if you went to like a Sam Goody or something when they charge you the full price.
I worked at like, one of those in high school. Yeah. And so like you...
like $17.99 for like the new Pearl Jam
album?
Yeah,
exactly. Like the new U2 record would come out and it would be like $19.99 on sale. And you're like, okay, all my allowance. It was just a... it could only have existed in that moment in time.
Yeah.
Before like MP3, before Napster, all that stuff. And it was just such a... it forced you to listen to the record. You put it in your car... CD player, or you were lucky enough to have a 6-disc changer in the trunk and you'd carry around, you'd curate those books, those CD books, those binders.
I could almost hear the pages turning as you're saying that.
And that was like, that was, you know, that was such a cool way to share music. You'd go on road trips and then, you know, obviously the burned CDR mixtapes that I had a whole book just of mix CDs.
And we always ask this question, were you more of the person who would make the CD mixes for other people, or did you receive them, or was it, what? And did you discover a lot that way, or?
Yeah, it was kind of 50-50. I was pretty shy at the time in, like, middle school, high school, so I was like, music was a great way to, like, make friends and share, you know, find common interests, like, oh, you like Oasis, I love Oasis, great, we have something to talk about at lunch or whatever. But you would, you'd curate these CDs and you'd discover all kinds of stuff. Oh, you think that's great, check this out. Or, oh, yeah, this album's good, but their first one was better. And you're like, oh, I haven't heard that yet.
I feel like back in the day, too, because CDs were so expensive and because I feel like all three of us were so hungry for, you know, new music in some sense.
Yeah.
It was much pricier to collect than nowadays. When I buy vinyl, I'm very selective because it's a heavy price tag. But back then, I would be like, I need the new Superhog album or whatever.
Yeah.
Or, you know, Oasis or, I mean, anything 90s that I had. You know,
totally.
List Fair. I just, and then those really added up because it wound up being $17, $18, $19 a pop. You know?
I mean, you kind of like also get it for like this, what do you call it, the CD insert, you know?
The
like
booklet.
The booklet.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
And you wanted to like open
booklet.
It up and like see what's included and what they said and like all that stuff and the artwork and like,
and
I don't know.
The lyrics. Reading the lyrics if they included them. And then sometimes the band was more mysterious and you'd open the booklet. It was just like a photo of them. And you're like, oh, that's not really what I wanted, but that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also remember the art of the secret track.
Yes.
We talked about this when we reviewed was it Nevermind had a secret track? I think so.
Was it? Oh yeah.
And Green Day had a secret track on Dookie.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I remember some people would like bury it as like track 75.
You had to wait a long period of silence.
Yeah.
You're just like skipping on your like Walkman.
Yeah.
like next. Yeah. Nothing.
Yeah. Oh, the Walkman.
Mm-hmm.
I loved. Well, not the Walkman.
Discman.
I mean, I had a Walkman too, but
yeah.
Discman was great because you were like, I am the coolest person. I have a Discman.
Oh, yeah. I had a bright yellow one.
Yeah, mine was bright blue.
Oh, like the sports one.
Yeah. It was sporty.
Yeah, no, that was like, instead of iPhones, you had like, who had the coolest Discman at the time.
Yeah,
definitely.
Oh, that was
over the head headphones, no earbuds.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
It was great. Listen to him on planes. Bring your Discman on your carry-on.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Sure. But I also loved, sounds strange, but the smell of the paper like with the print on it, like it always smelled like it came right out of the
printing. I don't
think
that's weird. Yeah, it's
like a very nostalgic like kind of memory of that.
Yeah,
kind of like if you were opening like a pack of baseball cards or something.
Mm-hmm.
Opening the jewel case, which varied depending on where you got it from. Best Buy ones were easier to open with the little sticker that held it.
Oh, we
it
didn't
closed.
Even talk about the cellophane. What a mess to open a CD back
in
the day.
Some of them they started doing these little pull tabs, remember?
Oh, yeah.
And then you could just pull that wrapper right off. But some of them were like really in there.
Oh, it would drive me bananas. Yeah.
Did you ever save, like, if they had, like, a sticker on the cellophane?
Yeah, it was, like limited edition.
Yeah, I, like, said something.
No, really.
To, like,
some
save that.
I remember some record labels, they would actually design it. So, like, maybe a Arctic Monkeys record did this, where, like, the sticker was kind of part of the album art, in a sense. But it was on top
but it was on
of
the plastic.
Cover. Yeah, exactly. Oh. And then the cover was, like, more minimal, but because the sticker was on it, it had, like, their band name or something.
Okay.
Like, you know? So that was, like, almost part of it. The whole packaging, the whole process of buying a CD was so fun.
Yeah.
Going to my locals in Boston. I'm from the Boston area, so Newbury Comics was like my...
Oh, yeah.
And Tower Records, too.
Yeah, Tower.
Gosh.
Mm-hmm.
And in New York, Tower Records. Man,
yeah.
I would go to that import bin and just dig through.
I was just
going to
mention the import singles,
oh,
which
man.
Were so expensive and when you think about it, for like $10, $12 for one song in the B-side, you know?
Sometimes they're so much cooler.
Yeah.
Though, you know, like... Well,
they seem really special when you actually had one because they were hard to find in some cases.
And sometimes, like, they release, like, a different cover, you know, in, like, a foreign country than in, like, the U.S.
Yeah.
Like, one of the bands we'll talk about later.
Yeah.
For sure.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
I was, like we said, like, I loved all the British buzz bands that were coming out. So a lot of times you could only find... the singles, you know, like the new Editors single or the Kooks or whoever, Franz Ferdinand, like just going to that import section was so exciting because it was kind of traveling without traveling.
Exactly.
Abroad,
yeah. And it had that little sticker that said "Made in England."
Yeah.
That was like on a price tag.
Yeah,
on
and
sticker.
It felt like it was so special to hold that because you were like, "This has come all the way from over there, and now I'm going to listen to this great band."
But then, how much fun can you have with it if it's 7 or 8 minutes long and you already
True.
Know one of the songs well?
True.
You know?
Well, then you'd add it to a mix CD.
Yeah.
And then before you knew it, you had a pretty awesome import CD.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you kept any of them through the years, or are they all gone?
I'm sure a bunch of them are still at my parents' house in their basement. I'm pretty organized when it comes to my CD collection, my record collection, so I remember packing that all out before they were moving houses, and so I had to sort of pack up the old childhood bedroom, and I mean, I don't even know the number of CDs that I had, immense amounts of CDs, but I like... organized, I alphabetized them, I labeled all the boxes, so one day I hope to have enough money to live in a place where I have an extra room or wall where I can just put the library back in place.
Okay.
Turn it back into the record store that I used to love going to.
I remember in college I had one of those display CD where you just put the actual CD in it. It didn't have room for anything else.
Sure.
And you would hang it on the wall and it'd be like its own art. They were trying to do that in like the late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah.
They'd sell it at like Urban Outfitters.
Totally. And you'd see in a lot of 90s movies too, like the hip person's bedroom would have like cool ways to display their CDs.
Yeah.
I don't remember that. No, I remember like vinyl, you know, like people using that as art.
I also framed vinyl back in the day before I played
Vinyls are... I feel like have always been cool, but there was such a distinct period of my memory that was only when CDs were like the rage and everyone was like, the audio quality is so amazing. Like,
I love that you want to bring back the CD.
Because no one else is going to do it.
Yeah.
So like cassettes came back, you know, maybe at some point people will be like, oh, this is funny. I can use it as a coaster and I can also...
Yeah, right.
Multiple uses.
Rough Trade in Williamsburg still sells CDs.
Sells
in fact, they have like two rows full of CDs.
That's wild because who the heck buys
two
those?
Whole rows?
Yeah.
No, really. Like, what person in
Sorry,
Williamsburg?
Sorry, I meant to say like aisle.
I would love to know. You'll have to ask Leo.
Yeah, I will.
But who buys CDs today in 2019?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Like older people, probably.
Yeah, that's true. So maybe like Adele fans.
Like people
who still
have like CD drives on their computer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is very rare.
There are certain genres that still sell more CDs to this day, but it's very few, like jazz and classical.
Sure, because I think that genre still benefits from different
usually. But
yeah, I mean, DVDs too. I bought so many DVDs because I'm a big movie fan too, but that whole disc culture. Oh, there's a new band, not to go to the new music.
Yeah.
But I just saw this the other day. Remember the logo of the compact disc?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It was a very distinct font.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like housed in a rectangle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there's a new band called Disc.
And
it's
God.
With a Q. And it's the same logo, but just with a Q. So it's, you know, compact disc. But
And how old are
good.
The guys in that 17?
They're probably like right out of high school or something. it sounded pretty good, but just for the visual factor of it, I was like, CDs.
In general, whenever I see, kind of tying that into 90s fashion now, a lot of the kids that are, 20 and under, Gen Z, are wearing a lot of 90s-inspired fashion with Manic Panic and the torn jeans at the knee and everything else. A lot of piercings are coming back. And
Doc Martens. Very trendy right now.
Yeah.
It's strange to me because they weren't alive when it was... a hit the first time around, so that it's just very interesting.
So it's new to them.
Yeah, it's all cyclical, right?
Yeah,
like, my mom always said like fashion is totally sick. She worked in wardrobe and stuff, so it was always cyclical. Like she couldn't believe like this trend was coming back, and then she's like, "Oh, hang on to that because your Champion sweatshirt will be worth something one day." No, she didn't say
and
that.
And it's back.
I wish she said that.
Champion is back.
I had like 100 champions, all the different color Champion sweatshirts, but got rid of them because they were all like huge on me and old. And now you put that on eBay, they're like,
I know,
hotcakes.
And that, what was that brand of like windbreaker type? jackets, like, and the members only and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
all that.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Definitely. And the, well, yeah, and the fanny pack thing, that's a couple years now in the making, but that cracked me up, though, because fanny packs were so uncool for so long, God. And we all had them, and it was very helpful to, like, hold all your your stuff on vacation, but then it was never, like, a fashion...
Well, it's back now.
Now it's
they call them buckle bags to make it a little less goofy, you know?
So
like more sophisticated if you call it a buckle bag.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But and then in the UK, that would be like a funny term, a fanny pack, obviously.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Remember the band Fanny Pack?
Yeah, and then the band.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
But I remember watching, going back to Oasis, when they put out the video for Champagne Supernova, and I was super into them at 15.
Mm-hmm.
And Liam, I believe, in the video is wearing these Adidas Sambas, and I was like, I need those shoes, like indoor soccer shoes.
Yes.
And then I wound up buying them, and I was, I mean, I saved up to buy them. I would wear them and, like, prance around high school. Like,
yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know. Even, it just, it's interesting that even when you don't realize you're being affected by what the visuals you see as a kid, it kind of seeps in.
It imprints
on
you for sure.
Oh yeah. I mean, I wanted to be like so many cool rock chicks. Like so badly, you know. I feel like it was like different, you know, like it was like that like kind of, you know, I wanted to be at like Kim Gordon or Bjork or like, you know, like these kind of like not, you know, as well known. Alla Bjork is pretty well known, but like, you know, artists. And like these days, it's so like pop culture. Everyone's like so in a like, they want to be like different people.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't get it as much.
Yeah,
but
it's more blended, I think, these days. Like it's all sort of integrated.
That's true.
Genres are more fluid.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's more fluid.
I mean, everything
cool.
in general, I feel like, is a little more fluid. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good point. I think maybe that's the differing factor.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. I think art and fashion and music and it all sort of just...
And I think the internet is also obviously a big part of it. I was in Berlin 2 months ago and quote unquote the hip culture here and the hip culture there, everybody looks exactly the same. You wouldn't be able to tell necessarily where someone's from based on what they're wearing, whereas I feel years back you would be able to tell, you know?
Mm-hmm.
All kind of blends. Yeah.
I mean, hipster fashion definitely populated into, like, mainstream culture.
Yeah.
Became, like, a style, you know. It's kind of weird.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But the mixtape before the CD version.
Yes.
Definitely remember the cassette version, though. Because that was how I would listen to the local radio stations in Boston. And
that record button with the red period on it?
Yes. Like I had my Iowa sound system
with
the dual cassette decks.
Oh, fancy.
And I, for, you know, however long the show, the radio show was on, I was like my own DJ. And I would try and catch it. You'd try and record it.
Mm-hmm. Before when you hear the,
before the intro. That was like the big challenge. Because then you're like, crap, I missed like the first 15 seconds of the song. But then you'd make mixtapes, and that was like the ultimate.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you gave your friend or significant other a mixtape,
it had meaning to it. Yeah.
That's real special. Mm-hmm. I mean, mixed CDs are awesome too, but because you could like write on them with Sharpie. But
no, but a mix. If you gave someone a mixtape as a teenager, it was like, I got a crush on you.
Mixed
not
tapes,
necessarily, but in a lot of cases,
they were just special. Regardless of,
yeah,
you know, I gave like my little brother mixtapes, and he didn't know what to make of them, but he thought he was. You know,
he was like,
cool,
do you have a crush on me?
Yeah. It was brotherly love. Yeah, it's funny because, like, I introduced him to, like, more indie rock Brit bands, and then he would introduce me to, like, emo bands. Like, he introduced me to Blink 182.
I see.
He's
a couple years younger, right?
Yeah, yeah, he's 3 years younger than me, but it was a great sort of, like, trade-off because, you know, I'd listen to WFNX in Boston, and they were like groundbreaking in indie. They were such tastemakers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I heard Super Drag for the first time on that channel, and I was obsessed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, where would you hear this band? They're from the middle of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And they would, they were curating my musical education mm-hmm. for a long time.
Yeah, for me too. I mean, the radio stations here, I mean, I grew up in Brooklyn, and it was before Z100 was pop. Mm-hmm. When in the 90s, it was, you know, alternative stuff. When yeah. you put it on, it would be Weezer, Smashing Pumpkins,
yeah.
You know, Tracy Bonn and whatever,
sure.
you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, and all I knew was pretty much like the radio, you know. It wasn't until I got to college that my taste expanded, as we've discussed on the podcast. But, like, my taste as a teenager until, like, 17, 18 were yeah. almost entirely dictated by Z100
yeah.
and I guess MTV.
It's yeah. interesting. I wonder how much we're shaped by geographically the radio stations that we grow up with.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, definitely.
You know?
People are. It's like different everywhere.
Yeah. Like, I wonder if, you know, kids who grew up in Portland, Oregon, or wherever, like, if their tastes are skewed.
Yeah, I mean,
way,
I feel like a top 40 station now
mm-hmm.
will play, you know, Ariana Grande, Rihanna, mm-hmm. Beyonce, the same X amount of artists. But I feel like it wasn't always the case that every single radio station played the exact same alternative music
yeah.
based on the
which
it,
was
the
so
market.
Exciting.
The market's changed it up a little bit.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Right. So, like, I'd find out about all these local Boston or New England bands, and then you'd branch out and they'd do like this special show about like what's going on in the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'd hear about all these other bands that you wouldn't physically be able to see at a show, but you felt like you were discovering something new, which mm-hmm. was always exciting.
So where do you discover stuff now? What do you read online and, if anything, in
Man,
print?
I wish this blog, A Heart is a Spade, was still around.
Oh, yeah. I love that one.
Don't know it.
Yeah, so like we were saying, I mean, Spotify is kind of like the new music discovery. I still read like Consequence of Sound or...
they've kept it going for a while now.
Yeah, maybe Stereo Gum a little bit, but... you know, I still check out NME.com and, mm-hmm. I don't know. It's all just integrated. Like, I work in media, I work in TV and branded content, so I might hear something in a commercial or people are talking about this band that's in this campaign.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all different ways now that you could stumble on it.
Mm-hmm. I feel like, for me, it's like social media.
Yeah, I was going to say the same. If I see a lot of people tweeting about a certain album review or anything.
I'd be like, oh, everyone
sure.
was at this show last night.
Yeah, yeah,
you
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And there'll always be like a little clip of it and you'll be like, oh, they're kind of cool.
Yeah.
mm-hmm.
Well, how much do you guys trust the Spotify algorithm to like...
I have to say, I mean, I obviously use Spotify, but I don't use it a ton.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. I don't trust the algorithm at
all. Are you Apple Music? What do you use?
No, I use Spotify,
oh,
but
okay.
I mean, kind of reluctantly.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah,
just because of how they screw over the artists mostly.
Yeah,
you know?
I hear you. I held out on the streaming thing for a while just because,
mm-hmm.
you know, I love the analog vibe too. But there are some good things in terms of like music discovery that Spotify is,
mm-hmm.
is helpful.
So like
for.
It recommends it to you?
Yeah, if you like this artist or they'll, based on your listening, you know, preferences, they'll make your weekly playlist or...
Oh, I've never like clicked on that actually.
Oh, you should try that.
Yeah.
I'm gonna
try
test it.
It
now.
Yeah.
It's not always
great, but every once in a while, every like three or four times, you'll discover something
mm-hmm.
kind of interesting on it.
I think also for me recently, I've been in such a throwback mood because of this podcast and
mm-hmm.
because in general, a lot of new stuff doesn't impress me.
Sure.
That I've been revisiting older things, so I haven't been seeking out newer stuff.
Yeah.
You know,
which is totally cool. I'll always, you know, be comforted by the throwbacks, but it is kind of fun to find stuff that is definitely in your wheelhouse, like stuff that reminds you of the bands you loved
mm-hmm.
that maybe isn't trendy per se or on the radio, but it's still there are still acts out there doing like I love guitar music
mm-hmm.
so discovering that new guitar band that is not popular yet
mm-hmm.
but you know Spotify just recommended it to me so
mm-hmm.
it's cool.
One of the questions we were planning on asking you was about sort of bands that have broken up that you'd love to see reunited.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's just...
Well, you know what I'm going to
yeah.
say.
I think I know what your number one answer is going to be, but I'm going to wait till you say it.
Well, I mean, look, I got to see Oasis once
mm-hmm.
while they were still Oasis, and I would love to see them again. I've seen Noel solo, which is great. It's not quite the same thing, but I would be front row if they ever reunited. And then what else? Like the original Bloc Party lineup would be really cool.
So they did a reunion, but it wasn't. No, but it wasn't the original guys. I guess it was Kelly and other rando people. I guess.
Yeah, that would be really cool. I saw the Misfits.
Oh, that's cool.
A couple years ago, which was fun.
Was that a big space though? No.
Yeah,
was
that
it
was
MSG?
At, like, that was at Riot Fest.
Oh, Riot Fest,
Chicago. Danzig was like breathing very heavy in between songs. He's like, can you keep up with the Misfits?
Oh, poor
and
guy.
It's like, all right, keep doing it.
Yeah, people must have been losing their minds.
I heard the Madison Square Garden show was really good.
Yeah, I heard it was good too.
You know, stuff like that is really fun to see. Man, R.I.P. Tom Petty, though. Heartbreakers would have been my number one. For sure.
I really wish I saw Tom Petty before he
passed. I got to see him once, luckily.
So lucky.
Amazing.
He's so cool.
Definitely. But yeah, I'm still rooting for that Oasis reunion, for sure.
What is the status? They hate each other still?
I think the last thing I saw was that... Liam was saying... I mean, look, they're famous also because of the music, but also because of that feud. Mm-hmm. Everyone loves that brotherly feud. So the latest is that Liam thinks that Noel is sabotaging him via Twitter or something.
Oh, don't they call each other potato heads or something?
I don't know. But I think Noel was saying, like, reason the Oasis reunion doesn't happen is because of Liam's Twitter or something. I don't know what it was.
I love that they're kind of, well, maybe not Noel, but Liam is still a child, I feel. No?
At heart.
Yeah.
Yeah. That new solo record was not terrible, actually. I was
although
surprised.
When I saw him do it live at Summer Stage like a year or two ago, it was not very good.
No. Well, again, I think it's like the bands that are ingrained in you at that point in time. I remember driving in the car with my dad in the Volvo station wagon, and there was a, whatever year it was, 96 or 7, but literally flipping through every radio station, and Champagne Supernova was on every single station simultaneously.
They were huge here, yeah.
It was crazy.
It was a moment.
Yeah.
Shall we hop into our repeat skip segment?
Sure.
Yeah.
So remind me again, how does this work?
So how it works is we introduce the album collectively, and then we just discuss our favorite and least favorite tracks.
Oh,
and,
cool.
And that's about it. And then, you know, certain memories attached to the record.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have some fun ones tonight.
Yeah.
I had fun kind of re-listening to these, actually.
Me too.
You guys, but so the first one is The Strokes.
Mm.
Is This It? It's a pretty classic one.
Classic.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I feel like eventually we were going to wind up here.
I had so much fun.
I'm going to look up the track list right now.
2001, quite a while ago.
I remember seeing The Strokes at 930 Club in D.C. a couple weeks after 9/11. Whoa. Were you at that show?
No, but that sounds amazing.
Moldy Peaches opened.
Of course.
I actually, to be perfectly fair, I mean, obviously I knew them because they were getting all this attention, but I didn't know the album super well yet. And then, of course, they blew up so huge after that. And they might have even played two nights. But pretty much they played all of Is This It, and that's it. No encore, no anything. It was like 45 minutes, if that. They were pretty great. I mean,
that's one of my
favorites. Oh,
yeah.
That was the great. I mean, the whole record is 11 songs in 35 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is my favorite kind of record.
And they're not really much for stage banter, so it was
no.
Right one to the next.
And I remember I got to see them in Connecticut on that tour with Moldy Peaches.
Mm-hmm.
And they would end every show on that tour with Take It or Leave It and no encore. And they would just walk off stage and be like, you're the coolest band in the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, I'm just looking at the tracks now. Like every song was amazing.
I feel like this was a really solid album. And that's why they got so huge so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
It was a really good album. You know?
Yeah. And that New York cool. They reinvented New York.
They
cool
were one
for
of
that.
Those four or five bands that really shaped that time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So, Jen, what was your repeat?
I was going to say Hard to Explain.
Mm-hmm.
Classic.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just like catchy. And, you know, when I was like listening to it again, you know, it like does that like pause moment or whatever in the song. And I was just like, I just love that. Mm-hmm, like mm-hmm. when it kind of comes back in and just like continues on. And I don't know. And then when he's like kind of more screamy, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I love that kind of tortured like vocal thing that Julian Casablanca does. But yeah. Or Trying Your Luck. I like that one too.
That's a good one too.
You know?
I mean, it's hard to pick a bad song on this.
Yeah, record. It was, you know, exactly. What about you, Matt?
I actually had a tough time narrowing it down this time around because I feel like I also love Hard to Explain and I still would dance to that song mm-hmm. out if I heard it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I also feel like if I didn't include New York City Cops as one of my favorites,
on the import version.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Well, actually, I wanted to talk about that briefly, that song in particular, because they left it off the U.S. version yeah. because the album came out just after 9/11.
You won't find it on Spotify. Right.
Yeah, Spotify's there. But when they put out the U.S. version, they changed the album cover, which is silly because I guess the U.K. version was too raunchy for U.S. audiences because it had a booty.
Yeah.
But they replaced it with Trying Your Luck. But yeah, I love New York City Cops. And then I also love Take It or Leave It. So it was a tough one for me to kind of narrow down. But what I've noticed is that almost all of my favorites from this album are actually in the second half. So I don't know what that's about, but I feel like it's a good album in terms of building the momentum.
Oh, definitely. I mean, just looking at these song titles, they're all so good. And also brings memories of like dancing at these
mm-hmm.
club nights,
mm-hmm.
you know, at Lit Lounge or mm-hmm. Misshapes or whatever, and Someday would come on and everyone would lose their minds.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a great one too. That one I feel like had a little more lightness to it.
Yeah.
Or like Soma or
mm-hmm.
you know, The Modern Age. God.
Mm-hmm.
All of these.
I know,
so good.
Pretty much everything.
I mean, and then Last Night just was like the indie dance floor hit of these
mm-hmm.
decade.
Mm-hmm. So every song's your favorite then?
Well, it's hard to pick one, but I think I would say...
I pick three, which I usually try and narrow down.
What's the one song that you just like play over and over and over again?
I would say Take It or Leave It.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or I would go with Hard to Explain as well.
One.
So we had a triple. We did this a couple episodes ago. We had the triple correct answer.
Y'all have very good taste.
I'm gonna listen to this record after we wrap up tonight.
Yeah, it's a good one.
It's good for a commute. I'll tell you that.
And what's everyone's skip?
Oh, Micah? That's not fair though. We just established. Every
I feel
song
like
is
you
great.
And I agree, Matt.
What would you guys skip?
Oh, for me, it's when it started.
Oh, so on the U.S., right. So they replaced New York Cops with When It Started.
When It Started. I think I actually said that incorrectly earlier. I said it was a different track. I said Trying Your Luck. It was actually When It Started. Right?
When It Started,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is still a pretty damn good song.
Yeah, but I feel like it doesn't fit with the rest for some reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I meant to say When It Started earlier. Sorry.
Yeah, I think I would agree with you. Or even maybe the first song, just because I want to get to the modern age.
Mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm.
But it, you know,
but it's all great.
You know, kind of sets it up a little bit.
No complaints with this record at all.
And our second record, shall we hop into that?
Let's do it.
it is The Hives' Veni, Vidi, Vicious. I feel like they, around the same time, they put this out and then like the compilation of this album and the early singles, which I think was called Your New Favorite Band. So I don't remember if I had one or both. But they were out kind of simultaneously.
See, I thought that this record was the greatest hits record.
I mean, almost all the songs are the same. So it's interesting.
I mean, just looking through these tracks, this plays like a greatest hits record.
Mm-hmm.
You have everything from Main Offender to Die All Right
mm-hmm.
to obviously, I hate to say I Told You So.
Mm-hmm.
Which is definitely my favorite.
That's such a jam.
The obvious single, but
yeah,
it's such a perfect
song.
But even like supply and demand.
I love supply and demand. In fact, I think, let me revisit my notes here.
Yeah.
I put supply and demand. I also put main offender too, but I think supply and demand was my favorite.
Was your favorite?
I have a good memory about the Hives, also DC related. I saw them just after my 21st birthday at the Black Cat.
Yeah.
And
oh, wow.
I remember they had a clock on stage, like a digital clock that had the number 45 on it. Uh-huh. They pressed, you know, on or whatever, and then they played exactly for 45 minutes, and then they left.
Amazing.
And every single song was obviously like upbeat, fun, in your face. They were such an incredible live act. I haven't seen them in 20 gazillion years, but they were such a great live act.
Amazing. I saw them at Riot Fest the same year as the Misfits too, and they still had it. That they were just the five of them looked totally different from each other. Physically, but like they were all in those suits,
mm-hmm.
and Pele, the singer, was just like doing his kicks and like still had that spark that they had from the onset. It was just crazy.
They're always fun. Like you could always have a good time at a Hives show.
Yeah.
Like incredible. Like I love like how like they're just so committed to like the theatrical show that they put on.
It was kind of theater.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, you're just entertained, like, the entire time. And, like, everything's so fucking catchy. Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, and high energy. And, like, so much guitar. Like, I don't know. It was just a good time.
Yeah. Yeah.
They were, like, Swedish garage rock band, you know, like, versus the Strokes or New York.
Yeah.
What was your favorite, Jen?
My favorite was Main Offender,
mm-hmm.
but like, you know, it's just very like what I like about them, their songs sound so familiar. So, you know, like they're kind of like a little probably like derivative or like maybe garage rock in general, just like all kind of sounds the same because it's so guitar heavy. But like, you know, there's just something about it that's just very familiar and catchy, and I just like gravitate towards it.
Yeah.
And but all that, you know, like Micah, you said earlier, like, hate to say I told you so, you like can't deny.
No, of course.
That was the catchiest song.
Electric that song is. Mm-hmm. And like,
oh my
if
gosh.
Like you're at that a dance riff. Party, like, and that song comes on, like, that, you know, the room's just gonna like erupt.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And so, and I was listening to it on my commute today, and I was like, I feel like I'm walking differently. No one knows what I'm listening to. Walking through the Oculus, but like, you know, I was like, oh, it makes you feel like so different.
Yeah.
You know,
like a little pep in your step.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
It's a great band.
What was your skip, Peoples?
For me, it was Find Another Girl.
Yeah,
just kind of felt like it didn't fit properly.
And I hate to hate on the ballad, the one ballad, but because it had that cool 50s like doo-wop-y mm-hmm. vibe. But come on, every other song is just like you're listening to the Swedish Ramones, basically.
Yeah, I mean, every song is like at most 2.5, 2:45.
Yeah, I was just
right?
looking. The whole record, 12 songs in 27 minutes.
Yeah.
So, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, that's incredible. But that's the thing is, like, they didn't, like, put in all the extra crap. You know, they just, like, gave you what you wanted, and then, like, then it's over, you know? And, like, that's why it was such a thrill, like, to see them, because there was no, like, dull moment, you know?
Agreed.
They don't put that excess, like, arty shit in there. Mm-hmm. It's just, like, no, they're just, like, wham, bam. But yeah, I actually said Knock Knock, but
I don't remember
it wasn't
that
as like catchy
though.
As like all the other tracks. But yeah, I agree that Another Girl doesn't fit at all. It's very tropical.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. I mean, it is a good song in its own right, but yeah, there's so many great songs on that record.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool.
We didn't do a kudos, but we typically do like one type shout out type thing, but I was thinking maybe if you wanted to like expand quickly on or not so quickly on Newbery Comics as like a spot where you found stuff. We can give kudos to them.
Let's give kudos to Newbery Comics. That's great. So they, is it a regional thing anymore? Is there one? I think there was one in Providence Mall. Providence Place Mall. That was as far as I knew it expanded.
They have a big online presence for like exclusive colored vinyl and stuff.
So it was this great record store chain in the Boston area. There was one on Newbury Street in downtown Boston.
There's 28 locations, dude.
I know there's some in like probably New Hampshire or like...
Yeah, like Connecticut. Maine,
okay. Yeah, so like New England. Massachusetts. A New England chain. But man, that was my special trip. On the weekends in high school, I'd go in to Boston on the train and just browse those CD racks and the import section. And then if I was lucky enough, they'd have a live in-store performance. Like I saw Travis perform acoustically in a Newbery Comics. Like, and then they'd sign the CD for you after. It was just such a simpler... I know they still do signings now, but it had such an innocence to it. Like you literally could just walk in and you're like, great, now you get to see this band from England play for you in this tiny little record store. I remember the smell of the place. I remember I had t-shirts from there with their logo on it.
I could envision the logo. Yeah.
Yeah.
The weird face.
Yeah. And I recently actually... Good segue, but I went back to Boston to visit recently, and they have the original location on Newbury Street has moved a few stores up the block. So that old classic location that I would always go to.
I'm afraid to know what it is now.
I think it's empty, actually. Oh, okay. But now they've moved into like a shinier three-floor version.
Oh.
And it kind of feels like a Hot Topic, but... The basement is all vinyl, which is cool, and they still have CDs for whoever wants to buy them. But the greatest part is it still smells like Newbery Comics, which is strange to me if you're in a brand new space. But maybe it's just like the boxes that the vinyl comes
merchandise,
in or something. But
that'll
be a memory I always hold dear for sure.
Love that. Thanks so much, Micah.
Guys, thanks for having me. This was a lot of fun. Definitely. Yes. Thank you guys. I give kudos to you guys for having music blogs and telling me what was cool.
Yeah, no, this was a good time and lots of like crazy memories. I don't know.
Our formative years.
Yeah, no. And like it definitely brought me back to my 20s, which is always fun.
Yeah.
But this was a fun one. I really enjoyed it. So we'll catch you next time
on Mixtape Memories.
Yay, bye.
Bye.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.